So my name is Rick Holmgren. I'm the president of the parish board here at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Meadville. And it's a pleasure to, again, welcome our friends from Faith Builders. Always a good Sunday when they're here. So since we are joined by our friends, and since we are concluding a bicentennial year celebrating our history, we thought it might be a good time to review and remember the foundations on which our future together will be built. American Unitarianism and Universalism are both branches of Christian theology with roots in the earliest Christian churches. Early Unitarians believed that there's only one God and so rejected the notion of three separate God entities, which the Trinitarians describe as God the Father, Jesus Christ the Son, and the Holy Spirit. A central, hotly contested question that divided the early Unitarians and Trinitarians was whether Jesus was God or a human inspired by God. Early Christians also disagreed about the nature of salvation, that is, who gets to go to heaven when they die. Some of these early Christians believed that only those who explicitly followed Jesus would be saved and all the others would suffer eternal punishment. By contrast, the Universalists believe that all people were saved through God's grace. Not surprisingly, there was an endless string of beliefs somewhere between these two extremes. There was a real diversity of beliefs in the early Christian church. The diversity of conflicting beliefs among the members of the early church is attested to by the multitude of Christian gospels depicting the life and teachings of Jesus. Most of you probably know, or many of you know anyway, the modern Bible admits only four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But we know that there were several dozen other descriptions of Jesus' life or teaching that were circulating in the years after his death. And some of these had very different stories and teachings than those contained in the canonical four Gospels. As the Christian church grew in influence, the theological divisions became a problem for the Roman Empire. These divisions destroyed the unity of the empire and the smooth flow of business. Constantine the Great, the first Roman emperor to convert to Christianity, wanted to settle these disturbances or kind of smooth things out. So he called for a council at Nicaea in the year 325 to settle the debate between the Unitarians and the Trinitarians. The council condemned Unitarianism as a heresy and adopted the Nicene Creed, which affirms the Trinity and which is still used today in many contemporary Christian churches. Subsequent Roman emperors held additional councils to tackle other religious controversies, and in the year 553, the fifth such council condemned Universalism as a heresy. It's worth noting that these councils were at least as much political as they were theological. The emperors who convened them often put their thumbs on the scale to ensure outcomes that were aligned with their beliefs and that would be compatible with the successful management of their empires. I also want to note that the Greek Orthodox Church didn't split from the Roman Catholic Church until after these councils were held to settle questions of religious doctrine, and the modern Protestant denomination split away from the Roman Catholic Church. So the three branches of Christianity, which together account for most modern Christian churches, all share the same foundational belief statements, which embrace a Trinitarian understanding of God and reject the notion of universal salvation. After their beliefs were declared heresies, Unitarians and Universalists didn't go away, but they were often persecuted. Neither belief was fully expunged from the community of Christians. After the Protestant Reformation in the 16th century, both Unitarianism and Universalism underwent a renaissance. I think it's interesting to know that Universalism in particular seems to have a lasting appeal among Christians. In recent surveys, as many as half of Protestants in the United States today express a belief in some form of universal salvation. The exact number varies a little bit depending on how you ask the question, but no matter how it is asked, at least 20% say they believe in some type of universal salvation. And I thought it might be interest to our guest this morning to know that the Anabaptists had a profound influence on and were well represented among Unitarians and Universalists in the early years of the Reformation. So that was kind of fun to find when I was looking for material for this. Unitarianism in the United States took root soon after the founding of the country, since many Unitarians left England to find a place that was more hospitable to their beliefs. In 1785, King's Chapel in Boston became the first church in the United States to explicitly adopt Unitarian principles. And many churches in New England soon followed their example. The adoption of Unitarian beliefs was influenced by the Harvard Divinity School, which promoted a liberal theology and Unitarian beliefs throughout much of the 19th century. And that spread Unitarianism in this country. This is also about the time when our Meadville Church comes into the picture. Harmion Heidekoper, as we've talked about many times this past year, Harmion Heidekoper, Margaret Shippen, and others were profoundly influenced by Unitarian thinking and established this church in 1825 to support Unitarianism in what was then the Western frontier of the United States. Heidekoper was in regular conversation with Unitarians in the East, and he helped establish the American Unitarian Association, which was also formed in 1825. In 1844, Heidekoper and his son Frederick established the Meadville Theological School to train Unitarian ministers, and that was located just a few blocks up Chestnut Street. The Theological School moved to the University of Chicago in 1926 and later merged with the Lombard College to form the Meadville Lombard Theological School. The Lombard College was a Universalist institution. Meadville Lombard is still one of the primary seminaries for UU ministers. Excuse me. Margaret Shippen was a pillar of our church in its first decades and did much to ensure its success. Among other things, it was Margaret Shippen who had the forethought to purchase this lot on the public square well in advance, right? Shortly after the church was founded, she purchased this lot so it would be available when the congregation was ready to build this church in 1835. When it was first founded, our church was explicitly Christian, this church. And the earliest pictures of this sanctuary show a passage from the 17th chapter of the Gospel of John inscribed above the alcove, which now up on that above the organ there. And that passage read, "This is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent." Still, as the Reverend Wilbur noted in his book chronicling the first 75 years of our church, this church has never been held together by identical beliefs, but instead by common purpose. This church has always believed that each person has the right to judge for themselves in matters of religion. Returning again to the development of, so one of the questions is, given that's where we started, how did we get where we are? So let's, you know, we're in a very different place now in the UU churches. And one of the things that was really important was the translation of the Hindu scriptures, such as the Bhagavad Gita and the Rig Vedas. They were translated into English in the latter half of the 19th century. And these translations, the Hindu scriptures, were closely read by a number of prominent Unitarians, such as Ralph Waldo Emerson and David Thoreau. And it helped shape their ideas about things, such as the role of intuition, self-reliance, the inner self, the divinity found in nature, the divinity within each individual. As a consequence, American Unitarians became much more open to other religious perspectives. And by the 1920s, the majority of Unitarian churches were markedly humanist in their understanding and were no longer explicitly Christian. The development of Universalist churches kind of went on a somewhat parallel path. The first Universalist church was founded in the Americas in 1744, which is about a decade before the first Unitarian church. And Universalism spread widely through the colonies in subsequent years. The Universalists were also influenced by the translations of the non-Western sacred texts, since they believe that all people are destined to be reconciled with God. And so they became broadly accepting of other paths as paths to reconciliation, although most maintained their identity as Christians. churches. Over the course of the first half of the 20th century, so now we're getting a little more current, over the first half of the 20th century, the theology and practice of Unitarian and Universalist churches became increasingly aligned. This probably had something to do with the fact that most of the ministers for both Unitarians and Universalists were trained at the same seminaries. There are three seminaries that were prominent then, the Harvard Divinity School, the Meadville Lombard School, and the Starr King Seminary in California. All three of them offered coursework in both Unitarian and Universalist Unitarian and Universalist perspectives, and really were the only three seminaries that focused on that education in the United States. So this gradual kind of bringing together of the two churches came to fruition in 1961 when the American Unitarian Association and the Universalist Church of America merged to form the Unitarian Universalist Association, which I'm going to call from now on the UUA, just because it's a mouthful. And members of the Unitarian Universalist Association churches call themselves UUs, and so I'll just go by that too. So there's a reason we just say UU and UUA. It's a lot to say. I always get twisted in my mouth. One of the problems is that unlike that we have members of most churches, UUs do not share a common theology. I think that should be clear from some of the foregoing. Even though this church here in Meadville is relatively small, we have fewer than 100 members, we still have, even within this church, a really broad range of religious perspectives represented among our members, including Christian, atheist, humanist, Buddhist, yogic, pagan, Native American, and probably a few others that I'm not aware of or couldn't remember when I was making the list. So we embrace a really broad theological foundation here in this church, which makes it hard to say what it is to be a UU. There are no theological statements of belief we can point to as being in common. And to solve that problem, the UUA developed a set of seven principles and six sources to define what it means to be a UU. This was shortly after the founding in 1961. There was some change for the first decade or two, and then they really settled on those seven principles and six sources. We read the principles in the responsive reading, and the six sources, and both the principles and sources are listed just behind the preface at the front of the gray hymnal, if you're interested in seeing those. I know from my interactions from many of you that the principles in particular are really deeply meaningful to the members of our congregation. And I know they guide my thinking and actions. And usually when I speak from the pulpit, I lift up one or more of them because I feel it's really good to reflect on them. The six sources that were identified for six sources of wisdom and things that guide the UUs that was identified by the UA. I'll just list them briefly. The first is the direct experience of that of transcending mystery and wonder. The second are words and deeds of prophetic people. The third is wisdom from the world's religions. The fourth is Jewish and Christian teachings which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. The fifth is humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science. There's the voice of God among us, so thank you for that. So, the fifth is humanist teachings, and the last one is spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. As these sources and principles served us really well for about 50 years, but as broad as they are, they still didn't do a really great job of encompassing everything. In particular, one example that's sometimes called out is the naming and the sources of Jewish and Christian teachings and humanist teachings get called out, but there's a whole bunch of other religions that don't get named. And so this question, well, then we start wanting to add more things. And the whole thing got a little unwieldy. So rather than trying to continue to revise or try and revise the principles and sources to include all perspectives or to help us be more welcoming and inclusive, which is probably an impossible task, the denomination recently adopted a set of six values, all centered in love, about what it means to be a UU. The values are represented at, and I didn't In the graphic on the front of your order of service is the graphical representation of it. And there's actually quite a bit of text that goes behind each of these. I'll share briefly about each of those. The values are interdependence, articulated as honoring the interdependent web of all existence and acknowledging our place in it. Interdependence is the way it's stated in the new values, is almost identical to the seventh principle. So it's retaining the seventh principle, more or less, in its current form or past form. Pluralism, which acknowledges that we are all sacred beings, diverse in culture, experience, and theology. Pluralism expresses our embrace of diverse sources of wisdom as we articulated in the six sources. But what I like really about this is I really deeply appreciate that in addition to honoring the diversity of all beliefs and experiences, the value explicitly names the sacredness of each being. It calls us to see the hand of the divine in all that we encounter, which I think is a beautiful thing to add. I really appreciate that new addition. The third value is justice, which calls us to be a diverse, multicultural, beloved communities where all feel welcome and can thrive. Justice is the value that motivates the second, fifth, and sixth UU principles. The fourth value is transformation, celebrating that we adapt to a changing world. Transformation acknowledges that we are never perfect and always striving to grow and learn. The fifth value is generosity, calling us to cultivate a spirit of gratitude and hope. And I love the way that this church has lived its values. For example, in sharing half of our collection each Sunday with community groups like the Center for Family Services or others in the community that have needs. The soup on Saturdays that we provide service for the community, and in many other ways, I love the generous impulse of this church. The last value is equity, which when you read the text that accompanies it, says, we declare that every person is inherently worthy and has the right to flourish with dignity, love, and compassion. You will recognize, those of you who are UUs will recognize this as the first UU principle. I hope that over the next year, we will consider each of these values more deeply, and going forward, we will allow them to support us as we move into our third century together. And again, I want to remind us that this church is indeed a big tent supporting a diverse community. The vast majority of us, and I tried to count to be sure of this statistic, but I believe over 90% of us were not raised in a Unitarian Universalist church. Most of us came to UUs as adults. Many of us were raised in Jewish, Protestant, or Catholic families, and some of us were unchurched in our formative years. Just as for myself, for example, I was raised in the Lutheran church by deeply religious parents. I was active in the church as a youth, and I even considered pursuing a career in ministry. But my own prayer and reflection on the Christian scriptures led me to believe that all of us, no matter our faith or our actions, would one day be reconciled with God. That is, all of us will be saved, no matter who we are or what we do. I fell away from the church when it didn't seem able to accept my emerging universalist beliefs. I still considered myself a Christian, but could no longer find a place for myself in the mainline Christian churches. Like many of you in this congregation, I was thrilled to find this church, where I finally felt accepted and at home. I'm glad to be a part of this church today, and I'm glad that we continue to be an accepting and loving home for free thinkers in our community. As our principles state, we affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and we support one another in a free and responsible truth, search for truth and meaning. May it ever be so. Blessed be, and amen.